Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, MF, how you doing?
I'm filled with rage.
Rage? Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Maybe I should mention just for anybody who is tuning in that you are, of course, MF, filling in for Jay this time. Of course, people who've watched Rocks, the TV program, will remember you from several key episodes. We haven't really seen each other in the flesh for many years. And in fact, you've been living in China for many of those years, but you're back now in the United States. So you've had a rather interesting journey, I believe.
Yeah.
Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Michigan, in a semi-undisclosed location of Michigan, near working at, I'm a TA and grad student at a large university.
Right. Enough said. We don't need to get any more specific than that, I don't think. And okay. And you called me tonight in a fit of rageful passion about some kind of situation which I have yet to discover. So why don't you tell me what's going on?
Okay. Well, I have a TA ship, and so I'm a teaching assistant, and I'm not enjoying it very much for a lot of different reasons.
What are you teaching, if I may ask?
I'm teaching two different courses each semester so far. I've been teaching English, speaking and listening, and sort of an American history class to foreign students.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Which sounds nice, except for the classes meet four times a week. So I have to prepare 8, hours of material every week.
Wow.
It's supposed to be a 20-hour a week assistantship, but we're all working like 30, 35 hours a week.
Yeah.
And so it's just pretty unbearable. I complained once and threatened to quit, and then they kind of try to guilt me into, doing it, staying doing it. So finally I got so mad that I went to talk to the union about it. And I found out that we could have filed a grievance and all gotten back pay.
Ooh.
Except for we waited too long. We had to do it within 30 days of the end of the semester. So if I had known, I could have had a huge amount of back pay. So I complained about a lot of different problems with our department. And they also gave me a copy of our contract, which actually we were never given. We were given a link to it online, but we were actually never given the contract we were working under. So we didn't know what our working conditions should be.
Right.
And I looked at the pay scale, and it turns out I've been working under the wrong pay scale for a year. I should have been getting $200 a month more than I've been getting all year long.
Ouch.
And that's why I was filled with rage, because they should know very well that I should have been getting the higher pay scale.
Indeed.
So I sent an email to the secretary that handles financial stuff, telling her it was a mistake. And also that this year I should be one level higher than I'm supposed that they say I am in my appointment letter. And we'll see what happens, it will be really hard to bear if they don't give me the money that I'm owed.
Yeah.
If they
$200 a month for back pay for a year, that would add up. And I imagine we're not talking about a huge salary to begin with, so that's a substantial increase, I would think, from what you've been getting. That could make a big difference for you.
Yeah. If
graduate students typically are living in poverty, not abject poverty perhaps, but genteel poverty.
Yeah. So that's what I was filled with rage about, basically. I was filled with rage about the idea that I may go, and they may tell me they won't give me this money back, and it could be that I'm complaining too late.
Yeah.
But I didn't I didn't see anything in the contract about a time period within which I have to complain. But I'm very upset about it because they have my CV and my application, and it's, you know, I should have been level 2 because I went into the program with a master's degree already instead of level 1. And they should have known that. I mean, is the onus on me to police them and, you know, and like dig into every facet of the rules about my employment, or is the onus on them to be careful and honest and pay people the right amount? That's what I don't know.
I like the way you put that, though. I think anytime you're talking to the bureaucracy, you should bring that little point up. You know, the onus on you is the onus on me, blah, blah, blah. That's a good observation. But this is a fairly large university, right? Fairly big bureaucracy that we're talking about.
But the woman from the union said that in terms of getting back pay, they've actually forced the university to pay out over $100,000 to TAs. So they've had luck with that. It's too bad I didn't know before. So I asked them, who's my union steward? And they said, you don't have a union steward because no one wanted to do it. So now I think I'm the union steward.
Yeah, probably.
for my department, because by default. So anyhow, I am going to go to the union meeting tomorrow and find out about what I can do if the school doesn't want to give me this back pay. Also, the people from the union tried to make a point with the head of my department to complain about the work hours and so on. And I'm going to find out what happened with that. My name, or I was told my name wasn't going to be used. And it was going to be sort of an anonymous complaint made to the head of the department. I'll see what happened with that. So. Yeah, that's what I'm going to find out tomorrow.
Yes, well, I can see where you might be a little bit nervous, but I would think if you're diplomatic and so forth, there's really no reason that you shouldn't bring up these issues, you know, and let them know, hey, I feel like I'm not getting paid what I should be getting paid by your own rules, and I just want what's right. Nobody could blame you for that, I don't think. And I don't think that as long as you conduct yourself in a friendly fashion, and there's no reason not to, because you're not going to probably get, you know, they're not as personally invested in sometimes in a large bureaucracy. You know, you might find them amenable.
I hope so.
If they value keeping you on and having you there going forward.
It's going to be really, I find myself very resentful about this whole job because it's just really, I'm taking it for economic reasons because I get tuition remission.
Well,
but on
sure.
the other
I mean,
hand, it's making it hard for me to study. And the pressure and work is so overwhelming that people did very poorly last year on their like the work they needed to do to graduate, people did poorly on it, and it was the worst year ever, I guess. And somebody actually failed their MA sort of exam, and it's the first time that really happened. And I think it's because of this excessive workload. So I'm just really feeling angry and resentful about it.
And I'm just curious to know, as a whole, how the transition has been. I mean, I think the last time we talked, you had just gotten to Michigan. And you really haven't been back in the United States that long. So I'm curious to know what the whole, you know, readjustment, reverse culture shock situation has been like for you. Coming from China, after having lived in China for many years, back in the United States, has it been a pretty smooth transition for you or kind of rough or what?
I think the rough thing was, well, you know, I'm surrounded by Chinese people a lot here. There are a lot of Chinese students and a lot of Chinese classmates. So that was not, that was kind of strange, you know. It wasn't a big transition that way. Huh. But it is much duller here than what I'm used to, you know. And stuff isn't as convenient. Like, I'm used to be able to, you know, Joe visited me. And as Joe can tell you, if he sort of reminisces about when he visited my house, about, you know, about 20 feet from my house, there's a restaurant. And if I go about, you know, 10 yards, there's a store.
Right.
And so everything is very convenient.
Because you were living here, in a massive urban area.
Yeah. And there are just always little shops and little stores everywhere. There's always something to see and always something to do. But here, like if I want to go to 7-Eleven or something like that, I have to ride my bike for like 10 minutes or wait for the bus. And things just aren't as convenient here, I think, because everything is all spread out and there's not, it's not as dense. There isn't as much public transportation. And there just isn't as much to do, you know. Yeah. I'm used to.
You're talking about the impact of the automobile on the development of our urban cities. I believe is one of the major factors that is the reason that the city is built that way in America, as opposed to where were you in China, Shanghai?
Yeah, and also, you know, going from a city of 20 million people to going to a city of like 60,000 plus.
There's also a city of 20 million people that is not entirely auto-centric in the way that American cities, especially of recent vintage, are. But then there's also been a lot of development, even in our old cities, that has run counter to kind of the principles on which they were founded that keeps them kind of friendly to pedestrians. And, you know, the main thing that I think makes a city pedestrian friendly is that there's places, not only can you walk to a place easily, but there's places that you would want to walk to.
Yeah.
Right? And if you don't have those, then it doesn't matter if you've got nice sidewalks and everything, if there's no place to actually walk to.
Or, you know, another thing is, having to worry about safety, that's not something I'm really used to. Like, sometimes people here have said, don't go to this neighborhood in the next city over. Don't go to this neighborhood, it's unsafe.
Yeah.
And, like, when I went to Detroit one time, we went through this part of Detroit where the girl driving the car wouldn't actually stop at any point because she didn't feel safe stopping the car. So we just kind of cruised through.
Huh?
Yeah, we sort of cruised through the intersection. And there was this car that was, like, going parallel to us. Like, it was keeping pace with us.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, why is this car doing this? Like, if we stop, will they stop and try to take the car or something? So I guess there's one kind of poverty in China, and there's another kind of poverty in the United States.
Yeah, that fear factor. You didn't feel the same level of fear factor. Some of that might also have to do with the policing and how that's all conducted. I don't know, but I believe that there's a sense of, I don't know, I was reading an interesting article about China, actually in the Fifth Estate. Have you ever heard of the Fifth Estate?
No.
It's a independent, underground, I guess you would say, countercultural, anti-authoritarian newspaper, or not really a newspaper anymore, it's more like a quarterly publication, but it's the oldest one, I think, in the country, and it actually originated in Detroit, although now it's published from like three different collectives around the country, and they take turns publishing it. And they had an article, which you probably would find pretty interesting, about anti-authoritarianism in China in this most recent issue. I should mail you a copy.
Well, China is really pretty anarchic, you know? I mean,
right.
You can get away with doing pretty much whatever you want in a lot of situations because there are just so many people. Like, let's say a policeman tries, let's say you run a red light How's a policeman going to catch you? Or let's say you do something, and there's a crowd, and you run through the crowd. If the policeman can't grab you in time, you're just going to disappear, and he'll never find you. I mean, it is. I mean, imagine, you know, the police in New Orleans. I know you complain about them doing a bad job, but imagine a city of 20 million people. Like, how could you police a city of 20 million people?
Well, in New Orleans, the issue that we have with the police is that the police are actually, as there's an editorial in the paper today talking about the police are, you know, unfortunately, so many of them guilty of committing serious crimes like robbery, rape, beating people up, and all kinds of things. So that the police are not all of them, but a lot of them apparently are thugs themselves. So, you know, that is a kind of messed up situation, obviously. But I have to send you this article. The guy's speculating on why, as you noted, China's very has a lot of anarchic aspects, despite the fact that it's often perceived from afar as being this authoritarian, you know, police state. But anyway, he speculates on like several different causes onto why it is that there's this anti-authoritarianism in China. What allows that? And he thinks it basically comes down to, or some of the things might be economics, Tiananmen Square, and what went on with that. The kind of, I guess you would say, mixed heritage of communism, and maybe a general dissatisfaction with the way things are going. And also, finally, I thought this was kind of strange, the bicycle.
He attributed... Does it make the people so mobile?
Yeah, and just the spirit of the bicycle, so to speak, that it enables a kind of independent mobility. I don't know. But it's an interesting article, so I'll send it to you, and I would advise, if I can find it online, I'll post the link.
There, during the Cultural Revolution, there was something that the Red Guards used to say. I don't remember the whole thing, but it's like, it was like, revolution is right, disobedience is not a crime, or something like that. And
Oh, yeah?
The young people used to say that to the older people, you know, because it was kind of a youth rebellion, really. I mean, Mao kind of said, don't follow your elders. You know, your elders are counter-revolutionary.
Right.
And some of the people who grew up in that era are like the biggest scofflaws ever. The older people are, I think, in China, the less they will obey the rules. Or the more, I mean, they're just blatant about not following the law. So that can be really irritating. And I do pity policemen. I'm surprised by the number of people who push and shove policemen.
Really?
people will fight with the police if you try to arrest them or you try to give them a ticket. They'll come out and start shoving the policemen. And did you know that I spent a while at the police station when I had to pay a fine, and it was this weird thing related to the Olympics. Like all these rules changed. My school didn't know about it, and so I had to go pay this fine. And I had this chat with the policeman while he was there, and I had to sit in the police office station for a while. And he was just like, yeah, you know, we do kind of a lot of negotiation. Like, American law is really set in stone, but in China, things are really fluid.
Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of times they have a lot of leeway in how they can treat people. And also they just spend a lot of time calming people down. That's what I noticed in China. Like the police are like, please calm down, please calm down. And it's hard to get them to punish people in a way that we're used to. Like if there's a fight and like you punch me, maybe when the police comes, the police will punish you. But in China, the police will come and they're like, oh, let's work something out. You give her money, okay? Give her some money because you punched her.
Wow.
It's like a different way of dealing with things. A lot of what they do is rather than arrest the person, the police will negotiate with you about, like, the compensation that you should give them.
They're just brokering justice or brokering deals right there in the street.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, rather than arrest him, why doesn't he give you 500 renminbi? So a lot of the time people would just be like, okay, I'll take it.
Very interesting.
So, yeah. But foreigners don't like that very much.
And how long were you over there, 5 years?
8 years.
8 years, wow. Time has really gone by.
Yeah. And the, my sort of news thing is this guy called the Dog Man. He asked me to come back to sort of see if a relationship with him will really work. And he's been saying, like, oh, if it's meant to be, we should get married. But that's a little strange because we've never actually had a real relationship before. We've just been friends, and I liked him and he liked me, but he never really wanted to give it a go. So now he really wants to.
Now that you're on the other side of the planet.
Yeah, well, I guess, when I went to see him and he realized I was going to be gone again, there's no reason that I have to come back. He really started thinking about it differently.
Huh. Well, that is sadly typical of the human being.
So, who knows what's going to happen with that. I think I'm going to come back and give it a try, even though we don't have much in common. I mean, I like him.
You think you're going to go back to China?
Yeah.
Just to see this guy? I mean, just to hang out with him and see what might happen?
Yeah, and also I like living there. I think I like it there. I like it there more than being here anyway. I mean...
Well, they're both huge countries. I mean, there's very, very many different situations you can find yourself in. I would think in either one of these countries, the key is to be able to find that good situation, the situation that's good for you. And if it happens to be in China, then, hey, more power to you. I would say go for it. And
so,
you know,
at least I'm going to give it a try. Because if I don't, I'll wonder what would have happened, I guess.
Absolutely.
You know, I still do want to see more things and go more places. Like, I want to go to Japan.
Mm.
I want to go to Singapore, maybe. But
what about Hong Kong? You ever get to Hong Kong?
What?
Do you ever get to Hong Kong?
Yeah, I used to go about once a month when I lived in Shenzhen.
No, I'm thinking of Taipei, rather.
I haven't. But I think, you know, I know Taipei has good television. Taiwan has much better television than America.
Right. I was just wondering because, you know, T-Black, also formerly of Rox, is living there in Taipei. And, you know, and has a baby kid and a little baby girl and is married.
It's funny how many Rox people ended up there. Like Joey Z also was in Taipei.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, that's right.
So, yeah.
Although he never actually, I think, appeared on Rox until he was in Taipei.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I have,
and also, I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I have some video that you sent from China of Snake Wine. Never has made its way into an episode yet, although I'd imagine still working it into an episode in the future. But unfortunately, our video production is kind of ground to a halt due to a number of technical problems and having a baby that has just kind of thrown a monkey wrench into the works. And finding the time commitment that it takes to actually, you know, produce, well, mainly to edit a television show, has just been beyond me lately. So hopefully someday.
Yeah. And
hopefully
when
someday.
Joe came, he shot some video with me.
Oh, yeah, I bet he did.
And he also, he was in Beijing during those, I think it was 3 minutes that everyone just stopped and commemorated the earthquake.
Wow.
So he and these girls from the ballet troupe were in some public place someplace. And I was just near my house, but it would have been really amazing to see because all the cars just stopped.
Really?
And people walked out on the street, and they were just standing on the street for about 3 minutes. So, he was there at that time. I guess I should say that I'm not as angst-ridden as when I used to be on rocks. So that's a change.
Well, I guess we've all mellowed out a little bit over the years.
Yeah.
You always used to kind of be laden with gloom and doom and kind of looking at things in the most, kind of negative way, but always with a sense of humor. I felt like I never was sure with you how much of that humor you were really kind of participating in deeply. You know, I mean, how much you were really laughing about it yourself and how much of it was just a performance, you know, to make other people laugh. I could never make the distinction, but you always seemed to me kind of like a female Catholic Woody Allen.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess sometimes I don't like to show emotion, or I feel embarrassed about emotions, so sometimes I joke about them. So I don't know. I mean, I tend to be sort of shy about showing emotions, so maybe that's why I made things more humorous. And a little embarrassed. I was a little embarrassed about being so nervous and embarrassed all the time.
Yeah, but it was also kind of charming in a way, so, you know, I wouldn't be too embarrassed about it.
I was relieved when I saw myself on television, actually. Yeah, I thought, maybe, huh, I seem a little bit charming. and I didn't think I would be. So, yeah, I was relieved when I saw myself. And also I had this very unrealistic picture of myself, too, so it was good to see myself for real.
Well, yeah, that's funny, too, because video has this authority, kind of like a photograph, except maybe even more so, that when we see video, we're like, yeah, that's it, that's reality. Although, of course, it's not necessarily reality. It's just one form of media that captures some aspects of reality, but it doesn't, not necessarily the final statement. But, I'm just reacting to what you're saying about to really see myself for real.
Yeah.
Is, you know, to see yourself on videos is to really see yourself for real. But, of course, there's many ways to see oneself.
I just always had sort of an unrealistic image of myself. And so I was glad to see that it was not as bad as I had feared, I guess.
Yeah, you've always had, I think, a great sense of humor, while at the same time not shrinking away from some of these difficult issues, and I've always appreciated that.
Oh, good, good. Could you hear me okay before?
Oh, yeah, I could hear you fine. Okay. Usually I found in these recordings, when I listen to them back later, is that, like usually I'm talking to Jay, and he sounds really clear, and I sound really muddy and awful. So I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I don't know if it's my phone or what, but, you know, we're just doing this with cell phones. Wait, do you have a landline?
No, I have a cell phone.
Yeah, so we're on cell phones here. And, you know, it's not the best quality of audio a lot of times. And, yeah, we'll just see. So we're definitely going with a very low fidelity aesthetic.
So how's the baby? Do you have any news about what she's doing?
Oh, she's, you know, it's like every day she does new stuff. But she's up to, I would say, about a dozen words now, but she doesn't use them that frequently. She's, of course, walking around and eating solid food and so forth. But she can still be a pill from time to time. Christy just laid her down in the crib while we were talking, which is unusual, because usually that's my responsibility to lie her down in the crib. Christy very rarely does that, but because I was talking to you, she had to. So, you know, that's just part of the evening routine here. But earlier, I had been trying to put her to sleep myself, and lately, these last few weeks, maybe this last month now, her nighttime habits have kind of changed yet again, and I'm not able to, half the time I'm not able to put her to sleep like I used to be able to. So I don't know what's up with that and what the deal is, but she'll just, you know, start screaming bloody murder. She wants her mommy, I guess. And that's what it takes. Of course, Christy's still breastfeeding, which is apparently very, very good for a young child. The latest scientific research is saying, you know, the 2 years of breastfeeding is ideal.
Yeah, I read that too.
And they do say that first year, if you can get them through the first year with no solid food at all, that it reduces their chances of food allergies. And, of course, true food allergies really suck to have, so I'm glad that we were able to do that, at least. So here's hoping.
One person I know works at, she's Japanese, and she works at this kindergarten with part Japanese and part Chinese kids, and she was saying the Japanese kids have a ton of allergies, whereas the Chinese kids have few. And she thinks it's because the Japanese kids come from an environment that's too clean.
Oh.
So they don't build up, they're not exposed to enough. They don't really build up the immune system that they should have.
That could be. I'm wondering if there's a relationship also to cultural attitudes towards breastfeeding. Because
I was thinking about that too.
Just everything I know about Japan would make me think that it's possible that breastfeeding is less popular there. Although I have nothing at all to bear that out, so that may just be inane cultural prejudices rearing their ugly head. But, yeah, they could be. It could be.
Okay.
Well, let me tell you, it's been a pleasure to speak with you once again. I guess we should probably wind it down here, and I should take a bath because I'm kind of sweaty.
I'm less filled with rage than before.
And that's good. So this conversation has had a soothing effect upon you. So hopefully you'll be able to get a good night's sleep and go in refreshed tomorrow to fight the good fight.
Okay.
And to, you know, in your diplomatic fashion, ask for what is rightfully yours.
Okay.
That's my advice.
Okay. Thank you. Well, have a good night.
All right. Take care, Mary Frances.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Emma. And
okay.
I will talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.